Mac couldn't believe what he was seeing. You know, as he begins, he's thinking to himself, I was just trying to get off the highway, you know, and avoid this traffic jam. And the next thing you know, he sees these teenagers coming up to him, and as guardians of the street, I guess you could call it, you know, because his car had stalled, and he had called the tow truck driver to come pick him up to haul the car away. But then you see these teenagers coming in, and he's thinking, boy, I hope that tow truck driver hurries up. And so as these guys come up, as these teenagers come up to him, and they threaten him, you know, with uncertain bodily harm, you could say, and the tow truck driver shows up, you know, and the guy's trying to hook up the car, and the I guess the leader of the pack would say, said to him, what are you trying to do? You know, you're interrupting our meal here. And then the tow truck driver pulls him aside and says, I don't know if you know this, but this ain't the way things are supposed to work. This isn't the way things are supposed to be. I'm supposed to be able to come in, haul his car away to get fixed, and he's supposed to be able to wait here for me without you ripping him off. This ain't the way things are supposed to be. But as we think about that, I can see Naomi saying those very words. This ain't the way things are supposed to be. This isn't the way it's supposed to be. Because if you're familiar with the first chapter of Ruth, Naomi had left with her husband Elimelech and their two sons and to Moab because there was a famine in Bethlehem. There was a famine in the land, so they go over to Moab to find food. And they settle there and they make a life for themselves. Long enough to where her two sons even take Moabite women for wives. But then calamity strikes. Naomi's husband dies. And then her sons die. And then after Naomi hears that the Lord had visited her people once again and there was food in the land, she decides to head home. And so she tries to send her daughters-in-law back, saying, go home. I don't know what life is like for me at home, but it's got to be better for you here. Stay with your family. And Orpah, one of the daughters-in-law, says, okay. After putting up a little bit of resistance, she says, okay. But Ruth says, no. No. Wherever you will go, I will go. Wherever you stay, I will stay. Your gods will be my God. And I will tend to your needs. And so you see this wonderful picture of this Gentile showing kindness to this member of the people of Israel, to this member to the house of Israel. As we see, as we hear that story, you know, we can relate to that as well, can't we? We can relate to the things that this isn't the way things are supposed to be. I don't know what sorrows or what pain or what hurt you have endured in your life. But we know when we open up the beginning chapters of the Bible, when we come to Genesis 1 and 2, we know that God created this universe, this earth, his creation, and it was good. And sin had not infected it yet. But when you get to chapter 3, you find the universal problem. Because Adam and Eve had both had sinned, and they had eaten of the tree that they were not supposed to. Sin entered into the world. Brokenness entered into the world. And because all of us here, all of humanity, are sons and daughters of Adam and Eve, we feel that brokenness. Sometimes we feel it more intensely than others, but we still feel that every single day. So the question we have, how does God respond to the brokenness that we experience? What does God do about it? I think we find the answer to that question within the second chapter of Ruth. And we'll see this in the first seven verses of Ruth chapter 2. And the narrator, as the way he's telling the story, he tells it the first verse, before he even gets into the story, he tells us some background information. And he says that there was a man named Boaz. He was from the the clan of Elimelech. Basically, he's from Boaz or Elimelech's family. And the way that he comes across, he says, and he was a man of standing. Another way that we could say that is that he was a man of valor. He was a mighty man. He was an honorable man. One who loved the Lord and sought to do the Lord's will by keeping the Lord's law. But then the narrator, after he tells us the story, he goes on. And he says, and then we pick up the story, and Ruth, she tells Naomi, let me go to the fields. Let me glean after the harvesters. Basically, the way the gleaning worked was that this was a provision that was provided for the alien, the sojourner, the ones who were traveling through the land who didn't have food, for the widows. And what they could do is as the harvesters were going up collecting the crop, the grain, the wheat, the barley, whatever they were growing, whatever fell to the ground, the farmers were supposed to leave. The farmers were supposed to leave there so that the widows, the sojourners, the travelers, the aliens could pick those up. And then they could have provision, they could have food. Even along the very edges of the field, the farmers weren't supposed to harvest that. They were supposed to leave that. Then Ruth says in verse 3 that, or Ruth went out and she began to glean in the fields. And I love this part. And it gets to the part and it says, as it turned out. Or another way that we could say this, literally, it is by chance Ruth ended up in Boaz's field. And then it continues on to verse 4 and it says, just then Boaz shows up. So you have, by chance, Ruth ends up in a field that Boaz owns, and then, surprise, Boaz is there. I don't think I have to explain this, but it's not by chance that Ruth ended there, and it wasn't a surprise that Boaz was there. That was his field. And then Boaz addresses his servants, "The Lord be with you." And they respond, "And the Lord bless you." And then he starts this conversation with his head servant. You know, it's kind of like this foreman, and says, "Who is this young woman?" And then the foreman, he responds and says, "Oh, she is the Moabitess who came back with Naomi. And she asked, if I found favor in your eyes, can I glean in your field? And she's been gleaning except for a short rest." And so we have the first answer to our question. The first answer to our question is that God provides for our brokenness through the daily provision. Through our daily provision, whether it's food, clothing, housing, God is faithful to provide for that, isn't he? So what's another way that God addresses brokenness? We see this in the conversation that goes back and forth, the way that Boaz interacts with Ruth in verses 8 through 16. The first, it starts out, Boaz addresses Ruth and says, "My daughter, listen to me." And basically, it's a term of endearment and saying, "Dear, listen to me. Don't go in another field. Stay here. Don't go after another, go in another field to follow those harvesters. But stay here. Stay close to my servant girls." What Boaz is doing, he's providing protection for her. He's showing kindness to her by showing protection. And then he goes on, he says, "And when you're thirsty, go get something to drink out of the water jars that the men have gone to get. When you're thirsty, feel free to drink." Boaz is going above and beyond, and we're going to see more so, above and beyond what is required. And then after she hears this, she bows to the ground before him. And basically, you got to remember the culture that this was in. You know, this is a time when kings would rule. And this is a way of showing honor to Boaz. It's kind of like, I'm not much of a golfer, but, yeah, I'm not much of a golfer, but at the end of a match, you know, when the golfers, if they're wearing a hat, they'll take off their hat to shake the other opponent's hand. Kind of that kind of an idea. It's just a way of showing respect. And Ruth goes on, after she bows and says, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you would notice me, a foreigner?" Ruth recognizes that she has no right, no expectation that Boaz should show any sort of kindness other than what the law of Moses required. The law of Moses required that she be able to pick up the grain that had fallen on the ground so that she could have food. Surely wasn't for protection, but Boaz goes above and beyond that. And he says, "Here, do this." And she asks, why are you doing this? "Because your kindness is undeserved." And Boaz responds and he says, "I have been told about all you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, and how you left your father and your mother and your homeland, and you came to a people that you did not know before." As we read that, if we were reading along in Hebrew, when we came to the word "your homeland," that ought to strike a chord with us. Because it's the very same term that Moses uses in Genesis 12 to speak of Abraham. When God says to Abraham, "Leave your family, leave your father, leave your homeland and go to the land that I will show you. Go to the land that I will show you, and I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing." And so what we find here in this is Boaz is saying, "You are a Gentile, and you're fulfilling the Abrahamic calling of being a blessing to a member of the house of Israel." And here's one of the neat things that I found in this passage is that as Ruth is doing this to Naomi, Boaz is doing the very same thing to Ruth. And so you have this mutual demonstration of God's kindness being shown to all who are participants in this. And because of that, Boaz says, "May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." And Ruth responds, "May I continue to find favor in your eyes. You have spoken comfort, and you have spoken kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servants." When Ruth says, "You have spoken kindly to your servant," it is a different term than what has been used in the passage so far. It is a different term than what's going to be used later in the same passage. Basically, what Ruth is doing, she's saying, "You're treating me as if I'm one of your own. And I'm not one of your own, but you're showing your kindness to me. And that kindness comforts me. It consoles me." But then the kindness continues. It doesn't stop there. And we see this in verse 14, and it says, "At mealtime, Boaz said to her, 'Come over here. Have some grain. Dip your bread into wine and vinegar.' And when Ruth sat down, Boaz serves her. And he says, 'Here, have some roasted grain and eat.'" And so you have this Gentile, this alien, this widow, sitting among members of the house of Israel, sharing in a meal together, eating together. But then it goes on and says, "And she ate all that she wanted until she was satisfied." She ate at the time when there was a famine in the land, but now she's coming and she's eating until she's full. And she even has more left over. then the story continues, and we read that as Ruth got up, Boaz gives some orders to his men. It says, even if she gathers between the sheaves. So the whole idea of gleaning is that you'd follow after the harvesters have gone, so you'd pick up whatever's on the ground, right? But what Boaz is saying, even if she gathers in between, so going where the sheaves are made. So basically what happened is you would have the harvesters would grab in one hand some of the plants, and then they'd have a tool in the other hand, and they would cut. And they'd toss it on the ground, and they'd go along, and they would cut. And they toss it on the ground, they'd cut, and toss it on the ground. And then what would happen is that women would come behind, and they would gather it up into sheaves. You know, when we think of fall festivals, you often see pictures of these big sheaves. It's kind of the picture of what's going on there. But what Boaz is saying, given his instruction, is saying, don't let her just stay behind, but if she wants to come up in between the sheaves, the stuff that's fallen on the ground, let her take that too. But then it continues. It gets better. And we see this in verse 16. It says, rather, pull some stalks out for her. In the Hebrew is a little bit more emphatic. It's most certainly pull some out of the sheaves. It's most certainly or surely take some out of the sheaves and throw it on the ground and just leave them there and let her come up and pick it up. And so we see that Boaz is going far above and beyond what the law had required to show kindness to Ruth. And so we find the second answer to our question. How does God address brokenness? Through the demonstration of his kindness. Through the demonstration of the kindness of the people of God. And so we have to ask, is there yet another way that God addresses our brokenness? And I think we find the answers into this in the remainder of the passage, starting at verse 17. The narrator concludes everything that had happened that day and says, Ruth had gleaned in the field until evening. And then she went to the threshing floor. Basically, what's going on is that you would beat the grain or the barley plant to separate the plant from the fruit of it. You know, the good stuff where you can make food, right? And so she had taken it there, and she'd gone to beat it out. And then we read that she had about an ephah. Gathered about an ephah's worth of grain. Basically, that's about 5.5 gallons. When I was a boy, I used to go fishing with my grandfather, and we'd go onto the dock. And sometimes he would take a big 5-gallon bucket, right? And he'd fill it partially up with water, and as the fish that we were catching, you know, sometimes he would throw it in there. But think about that 5-gallon bucket. This was overfilling. This is about 5.5 gallons. That's how much grain and barley that Ruth had gleaned for that day. I don't think it's including the leftover roasted grain that she had earlier in the day when Boaz had invited her to eat. And then Ruth picks it up, and she carries it into the city to where her and Naomi were staying. And she places it before her. And Naomi says, where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed is the man who took notice of you. And then Ruth responds and says, I gleaned in Boaz's field today. And then Naomi pronounces a second blessing. And she says, the Lord bless him. He is not showing his kindness to the living and to the dead. In Hebrew, that's actually a little bit more ambiguous than what it comes across. And I think it's intentional why the author does that. Basically, the idea is the Lord bless him whose kindness has not been withheld from the living or the dead. So the question when we come to that passage is, who is that pronoun referring to? Who is that pronoun referring to? Is it Boaz or is it the Lord? I think the answer to the question is yes. It's yes, because we had just recounted all the things that Boaz had done for Ruth, how he had gone far above and beyond what the law had required. with his protection, with this feeding, with the make sure you pull out extra grain and throw it on the ground and let her pick it up. But then, so it's certainly Boaz, but then we can also make a case it's for the Lord who's doing this as well. Because it was the Lord who caused the rains to come, to cause the crops to grow in the first place. But it was the Lord. And it wasn't by chance that Ruth had ended up in Boaz's field, and it wasn't by chance that Boaz had ended up there. And so what we see is we see God's mysterious but yet his wise providence working in the backdrop of what's going on here, to where we can say with confidence, yes, it is Boaz showing his kindness to Ruth, but it also is God showing his kindness to both Boaz and to Ruth and Naomi. And so what you find there is that you find both are going on. And then Naomi goes on, she says, this man is a close relative. He is one of our kinsmen redeemers. Because of where we stand in redemptive history, in human history, when there's a tendency to think of redemption, we think of redemption in the ultimate sense. Okay? When we're thinking of the cross, that is appropriate, and we ought to think that way. That is good for us to think that way. Okay? However, when we're reading in Ruth chapter 2, it's before Jesus came. And so redemption had a different meaning. So within the context of Ruth, redemption meant, one, that the kinsman redeemer, the close relative, could purchase the land that belonged to Elimelech. Okay? So one includes purchasing the land that belonged to Elimelech. The second part of it would mean marriage to Ruth. Okay? So that they would have children, and so that they would have the inheritance of the land that Boaz had purchased. Okay. And so what you find there, you find this very gracious provision that God has included into the law. This provision that the land could be purchased back. Then Ruth goes on and she continues to recount the story of what's happening, and she says, he even said to me, stay with my workers until they are finished harvesting all of my grain. And Naomi, or Ruth, is recounting Boaz's kindness to Naomi here. And then Naomi is affirming Boaz's wisdom and saying, it's good for you, my daughter, to do this, because you don't know what harm may come from you in another field. And then we get, in verse 23, we get the summary statement of that after that Ruth stayed close to the servants, and Boaz would glean until the barley and the wheat harvest were finished. And then she lived with Ruth, or lived with Naomi. And so we can see the answer to our third question. That God addresses human brokenness through the retelling of stories of his kindness to us. Through the retelling of stories, that includes both individually, all of us who make up Emmanuel, individually, all of us who make up the corporate body, the larger church. It includes all believers of all times. But then what it also means, I think, is that as we read the stories in our Old Testament, in the New Testament, we get to recount God's kindness throughout all of human history. So it's easy to see how God has provided redemption. So as we think about this, how are we to respond to this passage? One of the first ways that I think that we respond to this passage is that we are to identify with Ruth. Because three times within this chapter alone, Ruth is referred to as Ruth the Moabitess. Okay? I think we knew that in the beginning chapters of chapter 1 when it said Ruth the Moabitess. Okay? I think that's intentional. I think that's intentional to remind us that Ruth was an alien. She was a foreigner. She was a Gentile who had no claim. She had no right to expect any kindness from Boaz, let alone God himself. And then as we read this, I think we're supposed to identify with Ruth. because we were once aliens and foreigners, undeserving of God's mercy, undeserving of his kindness. So Ruth has experienced what every single believer in every single age has experienced, God's kindness and his mercy. And so we are to identify with Ruth. But another way we respond is because we identify with Ruth as an alien, is to trust. Is to trust our redeeming God. We sang earlier this morning, "Great is thy faithfulness." We are to trust our faithful God. Even in those times when the hour seems darkest, in the bleakest of moments, in the bleakest of circumstances, I don't think those circumstances are indicators, are clear markers of God's disfavor with us. But rather, they are chances for us. They are opportunities for us to renew our faith, to renew our trust in our God. As we recount, as we remember the stories of long ago, and remember our own stories and how they fit within the biblical story. But if you're here and you haven't placed your faith in Jesus, it seems to me the application for you to trust is the same, except God has shown his kindness to you through the cross. He has shown his kindness to you through the cross, through Jesus. And so it seems to me the appropriate application for you is to seek refuge under God's wing through the cross, trusting in him alone for your salvation. If you were to look in my playlist in my phone, you'd see I have a nice little mix. Well, not too much. So, you know, you have old country classics and some new stuff in there and stuff in between. You also have some rock songs in there as well. One of the songs that's been on there from time to time is a song, "If Everyone Cared" by Nickelback. Listen to the chorus of that song. It says, "If everyone cared and nobody cried, if everyone loved and nobody lied, if everyone shared and swallowed their pride, then we'd see the day when nobody died." What's appealing about that chorus is that I cannot testify to whether or not those who wrote the song believe in the true God of Israel, or the one true God who created the universe and he's called Gentiles to be part of his people. I can't tell you that. But some of what they're advocating, we can agree with. We agree for a day when there's no more hurt, there's no more mourning, no more sin, no more brokenness. We long for that day. But here's where a chorus hits it and nails it at the same time. It misses it because they think that the day nobody will die when we start caring and loving and sharing. The problem with that is that sin gets in the way. The problem with that is that sin gets in the way. When you read the end of chapter 4 of Ruth, You find a small genealogy. Ruth, or Boaz, had had a son. His name was Obed, who had a son whose name was Jesse, who had a son and his name was David. So within Boaz's genealogy, his family tree, if you will, he had kings. He had sons that he would be king. Now David was considered during his time probably the greatest king of Israel. But when you follow the biblical storyline on, especially when you get to the book of Matthew, you find that Matthew opens up with his genealogy and it says that Jesus was the son of Abraham, the son of David. Jesus came and he died to pay the penalty for sin, to pay the penalty for your sin, pay the penalty for my sin. But it doesn't stop there. It doesn't stop there, because God would raise Jesus from the dead. And it is through his resurrection that Jesus would be enthroned, he would be inaugurated, he would have been coronated as the king, the rightful Messiah, the long-awaited from Messiah, at the very least from Genesis 3 on. And so when we read the book of Ruth, there is much more going on than just God providing, showing his kindness to two widows. But rather what you see is going on, it is the book of Ruth is pointing to the cross, it's pointing to Jesus, it's pointing to the time when Jesus would consummate his kingdom, and he would come to this earth, and he will reign forever. And he will not die. That is the whole trajectory of the biblical storyline. That is the whole trajectory of the book of Ruth. Because it is pointing. It is pointing to Jesus. And it is pointing to the redemption. And redemption as we think of it, life and death being in the very balance, that redemption that Jesus has provided.